You are listening to the Better Together podcast, brought to you by the National Association of Free Will Baptists.
Welcome to the Better Together podcast, where we look for ways we can work together to advance the gospel of Jesus Christ. Today we have with us Dr. Jay Moon. He's done a lot of work. He's worked in the past as a missionary. He's a seminary professor at Asbury Theological Seminary and past president of the Great Commission Research Network. And today we have him back on the Better Together podcast to talk about something that you probably have heard of called MINTS. And so, Jay, first of all, thank you for coming back and joining us again today on the Better Together podcast.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Eddie. It's always good to be with you here, and I look forward to our discussion together.
Well, we've had a discussion in the past where we talked about MINTS, and you kind of unpacked that there. So I'm going to encourage all of our listeners, if they've not looked at that yet, to go to nafwb.org/MINTS. And there, Jay, they can get some information about MINTS, learn more about it. But I know some of our listeners, maybe especially that didn't hear the first podcast, are thinking, MINTS, what in the world is that? So can you unpack that a little bit before we go in a little bit deeper into MINTS?
Yeah, sure. Happy to do that. We're really talking with churches and church planters who realize that their tithes and offerings are not sufficient to meet their budget for various reasons. I know a lot of church planters that kind of stop because they can't get enough money to raise for 3 years, et cetera. And a lot of churches, actually about 30% are in the red right now in the U.S., that eventually we don't know if they're going to close the doors or not. So these are alternate financial models that are viable financially, but also help the church have a missional vibrancy. Those two always come together. And in short, MINTS stands for, first, monetizing underutilized assets. I is for incubating new businesses. And N is for nonprofits form mission arms of the church. C is a co-vocational church leadership. E stands for entrepreneurial church planting. And then if you're even off the chart there, I've had some people come to me and say, wow, we're not even, you know, it's not a lack of money, we're in debt, and it's not a lack of friends, people don't like us even. There's also these opportunities for decentralized churches. That's the D. So that's short what the acronym means.
Very good. And sometimes you'll even say we don't need to mince words when we talk about finances. So that's a way someone can kind of think about it, right?
Yeah, right on. I mean, it's unfortunate that this area of the church and church planting doesn't get a larger conversation. Because often one of the big reasons churches eventually close or church plants never get off the ground is due to their financial viability. So we're hoping to really restore that conversation in order for the church to have her missional footing to be vibrant and transformative in the community.
So I'm listening. I'm thinking, I've never heard of MINTS. The acronym you just gave was really great, but you didn't just create this, did you, Jay? There's a little track record with MINTS, isn't there?
Yes. So we've done some research over the last 5-6 years, and actually some current research will be coming out the Great Commission Research Journal. So this is based on not just dreaming, not just like pie in the sky type of thinking. This is based on actual churches that are facing these concerns and church planters facing these concerns. And how are they addressing their financial viability to retain a missional vibrancy, missional footing? So this is based on case examples of people in North America and beyond that are doing this, but also realizing that there's biblical precedent as well. This isn't just something that is taking business ideas and mixing it with church in a new way. This is looking back at biblical foundations, both the Apostle Paul, you know, Jesus' interaction in the marketplace, as well as historical foundations where the church has often engaged the marketplace and engaged these kind of approaches. I think the Industrial Revolution, before the Industrial Revolution, where people worked and where they worshiped and where they played, you know, their home, was very close. But after the Industrial Revolution with specialization, people started to move away and those started to get torn apart. So I think what we're doing is bringing back what the church was experiencing before the Industrial Revolution in order to have a missional imagination for our contemporary generation.
That's great. And you give examples of that in your books that people can take a look at and can see how that this is something you mentioned, like it's a renaissance, really. This is not anything new per se, right?
Yeah, I think that's important, Eddie, for people to realize that there are biblical foundations, theological foundations. This isn't just like the new shiny toy that the church is playing with for a period of time, and then we'll leave it to get onto something else. This actually has larger roots to it, and we are just like recapturing what we lost.
That's good. So I want to encourage all of our listeners, if you've not done this, to go to nafwb.org/mints. You'll be able to see a diagram that it's both in Jay's article on the Great Commission in the Great Commission Research Network, as well as in his book. So he puts this out in various ways. So Jay, they should be able to see this on the screen, where you talk about some of the financial approaches that are available to churches as a function of relationships with unchurched people. So people are listening and they're thinking, this sounds great, but you kind of alluded to it. There's people that don't have any money, and there's also people that are in great debt. And so if they're in a place, of course, if you're driving, do not start looking at this podcast, right? But you can see on the graph, we've got low liquidity and high liquidity. So let's just start with that a little bit. I'm a lay person, or I'm a pastor, and I'm trying to figure out my financial liquidity. How does a church assess where they are financially, whether they be frozen or fluid when it comes to liquidity?
Yeah, good question. And this is probably the most business speak right now that we'll talk about on this podcast. Liquidity is basically a measure of how quickly, easily a church can take their assets and convert them to cash at market value. Okay, so that just think that through. How quickly people can take their assets and convert them to cash at market value. Some things are very liquid, like, of course, cash in the bank, or certificate deposit, or a stock, or a bond, or something like that. Other things are less liquid, like land and buildings and materials, et cetera. So to help us get an idea of how liquid the church is, their financial position, there's something called the quick ratio. And it's actually something you can do in just a few minutes. If you take on the numerator, the top part of the equation, how much cash the church has available, and add to that any marketable securities. So that's just business speak for any investments that can be quickly converted to cash, like stocks, bonds, money market funds, certificate deposits, et cetera. So you take the cash plus the marketable securities, plus any pledges, like some churches have the pledge campaign, et cetera. So take that, add all that together, and divide that by the current liabilities. And usually the liabilities are the debt that the church has. And largely it's either the rent that they're paying or the mortgage payment that they're paying. So it's not hard to follow. So for example, if a home church has a cash savings of $20,000 in the bank, and they have some stock of $4,000 and no yearly pledges, just add the 20 plus the 4, that's $24,000. If they have a yearly mortgage payment of $30,000, the quick ratio is 24 divided by 30, and that gives you 0.8. Okay. So if the number is less than one, then the church is not able to meet their debt obligation, and therefore they're in the category of frozen. If that quick ratio is over one, then they are able to meet their debt obligation, which means they have extra money left over. So therefore they're in the category of fluid. So hopefully those calculations aren't too difficult. It's just a matter of getting those numbers from your financial statements and then adding basically the assets divided by the liability or the debts. And that'll give you a number. If it's over one, you're in the fluid category. Under one, you're in the frozen category.
And so over one in the fluid category, AC goes out. You're in a position where you can deal with that. You can handle that. Over one in the fluid category, probably able hey, let's have something special for Easter or Fall Festival. You've got some resources that allow you some flexibility and not this whole scarcity attitude, right?
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. So if you have fluidity, what the way we describe it at our church is this. If we have financial fluidity, that means that we can be more generous in our communities. So yes. Our whole discussion is not just about the church getting like richer and better off just to survive. It's really looking at what are some financial principles, applications that can help the church become more engaged and in tuned to the issues in the community. So we have more of a financial, like a missional impulse. Because really, you know, Eddie, if a church has compassion, but no capacity, they just get frustrated. If you have compassion, which is matched by capacity, then you can be transformative. So that's what we're trying to reach towards, is helping the church be transformative and missionally engaged in their communities.
So right now, the world really needs the church now more than ever. 17.8% of the population is depressed. You think about all the addictions that people struggle with. And so what you're saying is you need this fluidity. So compassion without the capacity is, oh, I hate this is happening in our community. But when you've got capacity, you can do something about that, right? And so that's kind of where we want to look at as a church, not just surviving, but thriving to impact the community. And the first area you talk about is that whole financial fluidity. Let's shift gears a little bit. You also talk about relationships, right? So whether they be open or closed, and I'm taking it open relationships, they know the unchurched, they know the dechurched. Closed, it's more like they're kind of in a bubble, is what I think I've heard you say. How does a church know? I mean, is there a way they can just assess quickly, oh my, we're in a bubble or we're closed when it comes to networks and so forth? Or how can they know when they're open?
Yeah, good question. As you'll notice, both the network evaluation as well as the financial liquidity is taking an asset-based approach, because churches often bemoan what they do not have. In other words, they do not have a certain amount of money, personnel, et cetera. But we're taking an asset-based approach to see what assets do the church already have. And this is kind of like Matthew 25 with the parable of the talents, noting that everybody's been given something. Mm-hmm. Like everybody has something in their hands to steward. And it's not just cash, but it's also relationships. So this is the second part of that grid, is the relational networks. Consider the number of relationships that people have in the church with those that are either unchurched or dechurched. And, you know, it's not easy to quantify, but this gets you thinking about, which is really one of the keys for church multiplication and church planting, is finding out what are open networks that we can engage people outside the church so that we don't become like a holy huddle or a little bubble that we're in where we're just relating to ourselves. So one way to start looking at that is to think about what Donald McGavran calls the bridges of God. These are these relationships with people that church people have, but these are relationships with those that are outside the church that are either unchurched or dechurched. What quantity and strength of relationships do we have with those folks? Because these become like the vital networks that connect people to the church. So one way to think about that is to simply ask the church members, do we know and spend time with people who are unchurched or dechurched? And think about where you work. Think about your family network. Think about where you play, you know, like sport activities, the gym, et cetera. And then start to list the names of people that you interact with at least monthly that are not going to a church. And then think about how many of these people do you know well enough that you could either invite to an event or some activity at your church. And for a church of 100 people, if you have like 10 to 20 such relationships, then you're in the open category. In other words, there's enough open networks for the church to reach outside of itself to connect with those that are not in the church. if you have less than 10 such relationships for a church of 100 people, then your church is in the closed category. And you start to think, okay, we haven't intentionally closed these networks, but what are ways that we can open the networks that we already have or establish new networks with people in various venues? So that gives you like a quick way in talking with your church to think, are we like closed to the neighborhood, the community, people that aren't churched or de-churched? If we have less than 10 out of 100 people in our church, then we're in the closed category. If we have, you know, over 10 to 20, then we're in the open category.
So you're listening, you're saying, this is a whole lot to take in. I got you. Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. So that's why you go and get Jay Moon's free book, Missional Vibrancy and Financial Viability. You could also Google the Great Commission Research Network. And Jay, I think that journal article is a very succinct look at the book, a good way that people could just read that, get a good sense of what Mintz is about. But really, when you talk about open versus closed relationships, all of our churches, to be evangelistic, have got to be open, don't they? Right. So it's financial, yes, but it's also just having an impact in one's community, knowing more and more unchurched and de-churched people so that we can reach them. So, all right, I'm listening and I'm like, okay, I've assessed that. If I'm a church leader and I'm thinking, okay, we're open, but we're frozen as far as liquidity comes. Let's talk a bit about, really, you've developed, and you talk about that and those resources I mentioned, you've talked about specific interventions that people can utilize. And so let's just go through and just kind of go over this a little bit. What are some things churches can do that find themselves with frozen rather than fluid assets? So you use that QR quick ratio a minute ago, and they're like, well, we're below 1.0. So what can those folks do to help themselves financially and to help themselves reach their community?
Yeah, good. You know, I'm not trying to make this more complicated than it needs to. It's just that we're working with a problem that's rather pervasive and nobody's really talking about it much, Eddie. And therefore, yeah, we're trying to get some handles on that. So I hope I'm not overcomplicating it.
But, I don't think you are.
Okay. So what tends to happen, and think about your own situation, if we don't think this through a little bit, eventually the church just gets desperate and they have these desperate appeals for money, for fundraisers, capital campaigns, etc. That is like a last desperate Hail Mary kind of pass. It turns out that we don't need to be limited to those. Now, again, I'm not saying we shouldn't tithe and have offering. We should. Those are good, but they have, maybe at this point, they're not sufficient on their own. And it turns out that limitations often provide the fertile ground for innovation. Mm-hmm. What I mean by that is that when people think about the limitations put upon them, don't look at that as a negative. Let's look at that as providing opportunities to start dreaming again a little bit. So, for example, at the top left, it talks about monetizing underutilized assets. A lot of churches have no idea that they are sitting on the assets they have. You have to be careful how you say that. But they're sitting on their assets, like the parable of the talents, the one that has one talent, they're just sitting on it. Meaning this, they may have a building. They may have a parking lot. They may have other resources available to them, but that building is used 6 hours a week by the church, and the rest of the week is just sitting there. What if that building could be considered an asset that could be monetized? Either there's some co-working space there, use the parking lot for, well, one church I know in Arkansas, the church, the circus comes in town twice a year and uses the church parking lot, pays them $12,000 every time. And the church says, you know what? We'll be inconvenienced for like a week and we'll park somewhere else. but it's that asset, you know, thinking of all the resources there as assets. How can they be monetized? I'd love to see like Airbnbs in some church space, or I mentioned like collective workspace, like in the gig economy, millennials like to have these side gigs. But after a while, they want to have a collective space to work together. Why not open unused spaces in the church? And this provides both a cash flow, but it also connects the church to those outside. A couple other options too. The co-vocational approach is a great option. I consider myself a co-vocational pastor. You know, I'm a teaching pastor of a church, and there's four of us that rotate the teaching, et cetera. What that does for me, Eddie, and this is one of the big reasons I do it, is, you know, I teach at a seminary, which is great, but I'm around Christians all day, which I love, but I'm in this little bubble where if I'm teaching evangelism and church planning, I need to break outside of that. So I have these five small businesses that I operate, and every week it gets me outside to connect with people that are unchurched or dechurched. They think that I'm just like a treehouse guy, or an Airbnb person, or selling beef to them. They don't realize I'm a pastor listening to them to find ways to minister to their soul. And the co-vocational posture gives me that opportunity to engage them. It also provides less of a burden upon the church to support the pastor, you know. So that's another approach, the co-vocational. And then the third one is the nonprofit as a mission arm of the church. So when you think about this, this is kind of like that left quadrant, the worst of both worlds. You have no money, no friends. You have closed networks of people and then frozen liquidity. It's not actually the worst posture to be in. What a church can do is create a nonprofit that can receive funding that the church would not be able to receive. So in other words, again, the church in Little Rock, who has a $500,000 budget for their nonprofit, none of that money comes from the church. It comes from government agencies. It comes from other churches even. As they are meeting needs in the community, and the church sees this as their mission arm, but the nonprofit is autonomous. I mean, there's a separate board, et cetera. The church has de facto position on the board to prevent mission drift, but it's not subsumed under the church. The church doesn't own it. There's a separate nonprofit, separate filing, et cetera. What this does is actually rather incredible. It allows the church to be missionally engaged, but it doesn't require money from the church to do it. And actually what can happen is instead of being simply like an even transaction, it can be a positive financial transaction because the nonprofit can rent space, meeting space from the church at market rates. Even though the government may give money to this nonprofit, they don't care where that church meets, has office space, et cetera, as long as it's at market rates. It turns out they can very easily rent office space from the church at market value. Therefore, this provides a positive income stream in the church. And at the same time, it's having a missional impact in their communities. So those are three approaches that can be used when people, maybe instead of having a desperate financial appeal, think about these other three approaches first or concurrently with their other fundraising appeals.
And it helps them financially. It also helps them really with their relationships. You're alluding to that with the church and the D church. So unpack that a little bit more. The church with no friends, they may have money, so they may have financial liquidity, or they may be frozen, which you mentioned is the worst of all worlds. What other things might a church do that finds themselves in these kind of closed relationships with the community?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about both the co-vocational type of approach, and we've also talked about the nonprofit. A third approach when there's closed networks is to think about entrepreneurial church planting. This is where the church starts a business in order to create a venue for a church plant or a church to be established. So I know lots of churches that are coffee shops or bakeries or workout facilities, et cetera. And what they find is that, like in London, England, Paul Unsworth, he said, you know, there's 20,000 people a day that go down this street that have no connection to a church, because like 1-3% of people are churched in that community. He said, how do we connect with them? Well, they started this cafe slash coffee shop, which connects with people, and people are really looking for belonging and purpose. So therefore, the church planner connects with the people that come into the church, well, into the cafe, and that becomes a meeting space on Wednesday nights for people to meet and gather for a church. So what that does is it provides a space where the church doesn't have relationships with those outside the church. It provides this like third space, a safe space where people can connect. And it may even be as simple as there's a space where this one gal who is a spin teacher, you know, they have these bicycles and the ladies and guys will spin on it. She said after the spin class, she just invited people to say, hey, if anybody's interested, if you want to stay around for a little bit, we're going to talk about our families and our faith. We'll pray with each other. I'll read something from God's word to encourage us. And the ladies had already carved time out to, you know, have the babysitting worked out, et cetera. They're very happy to meet and have religious discussion, whereas they would not be very amenable at other times like Sunday morning, you know, but they've already carved that time out. It's just finding ways to engage people that are outside the church and looking at the marketplace as a ripe place dripping with sacred potential to connect with people.
Oh, that's great. And so really, these interventions can have an impact for the gospel. It can also share with us a bit about some of the ways they can impact the community, because some of the communities where we're trying to start churches or where churches are already located, communities are really struggling with addictions. They're struggling financially to help support another church. A lot of single parents sometimes. What are some ways they can have a positive impact upon the community?
Yeah, great, because this is really the heart of the matter, Eddie. What we're trying to do is foster what we're calling a missional imagination in order to create kingdom innovation. So a Nobel Prize winner said that discovery consists of seeing the same thing as others, but thinking what others didn't think. Mm-hmm. So what if a missional imagination means the church sees the same thing as others, but we think about God's mission to reveal the kingdom of heaven on earth? Thinking about the marketplace in those kind of terms. Think about the relationships we have in those kind of terms. Think about the assets that God has given us to steward in those kind of terms, such that we say, okay, what has God put in our hands in order to steward, and how can we use these to reveal the kingdom of heaven on earth? So the church plant that I'm a part of, you know, uses the space as an event center. In other words, people have events like birthday parties, they have wedding rehearsal dinners, you know, they have bridal shower, et cetera. And they'll come to our space. We meet with them. We provide space for them. And we charge a little less than the market space. But this provides about $3,000 to $4,000 a month to come into the church, which really helps as a cash flow stream. But it also engages us in the community, where people realize, wow, I didn't know this church is all about having a space. And we have some guidelines, like there's no alcohol, and they ask why. We say, well, we also have a recovery community that meets in here on Sunday nights and Tuesdays, and we don't want anybody to stumble because of somebody's careless use of alcohol. And everybody respects that, but it also gives us a kind of side door to tell them about what this space is really about. You know, and it really is left up to your imagination. There's lots of ways that we can think through about meeting the needs in the community. Think, like you mentioned, recovery or addiction. We've had in the past, not presently, one counselor who rented space from us that did their counseling ministry in one of the rooms in the church, and largely through, you know, counseling about addiction behaviors. But it also gives you an opportunity to start thinking through what are some of the other concerns in our community. We had, unfortunately, a couple suicides at our nearby high school, and we opened up the space to have like a wake. We didn't charge for any of that. And we said, by the way, high school students that need a space during their finals study week, you can come here and we'll cook some pancakes around 11 o'clock, it turns into a karaoke, which, you know, I guess it should, you know. But it gives us a posture to be able to open that space and not charge people for it. And it's just really left to your imagination. Think about the needs in the community, whether it's like opiate addiction, whether it's the need for meeting space, whether it's like cafe, workout facilities, et cetera. Start thinking through with a missional imagination, how can we take what God has given us to fulfill God's mission to reveal the kingdom of heaven on earth? So it's not just sacred space, and our jobs aren't just secular things. What if this is all dripping with sacred potential?
That's great. So if we kind of summarize it, you're saying, look at your assets. Sometimes it's resources, money, and so forth. Sometimes it's your facilities. Sometimes it's the relationships that you have. And we're not just thinking about ourselves, trying to sustain ourselves, pay our pastors and so forth. We're thinking about the needs of our community. And it's almost counterintuitive when you help your community, it ends up helping you by reaching more people, but also and sometimes financially as well. It's just a really good approach that you've really laid out and explained for the church to be able to use, Jay. And I appreciate your efforts in doing this, how you've done this in practice as a missionary, and then how you've laid it out for the church to be able to take and look at and imitate it. Thank you for what you've done, my friend.
Well, thank you, Eddie. I mean, like you said, we're trying to really do both, like trying to focus on a missional posture to engage the church and the community. To get there, you need to have some financial sustainability, and that's why we're looking through some of these pieces. You know, I coach church planters and pastors in this approach. We actually have with Exponential Learning Community that takes like 25 people at a time, and we go through these different approaches. And at the end of like the meetings, and we have, it's over a 4-month period, at the end of the period, they have a particular approach that is fit for their context, using some of these rubrics to be able to help them take their first step. So usually I end with this to say, okay, after our discussion, think through, what is your next right step? You don't have to have everything figured out. You don't have to have the whole, you know, 5-year, 3-year plan, but think through, what is your next right step? What has God put in your heart? Is there a dream there? You know, don't die with that dream. Is there some assets that are underutilized at this point? Are there some network potentials that you haven't fully engaged yet? Think through your next right step. It doesn't have to be huge, but usually these huge changes come about through small steps, one at a time. And in the process of that, we try to get other people together so that they can talk about it together. And one reason I like having like a learning cohort is that you gather, say, 20, 25 people. And what incubates is called the adjacent possible. This is a term in innovation studies where when people are in disparate locations and they come together, they get adjacent to each other, new possibilities arise that they wouldn't have thought of before. Like a classic example is this guy who was a metallurgist, had these little metal pieces he carried with him. He went to visit his friend who had a wine press. And as he was pressing, you know, the grapes, he put one of his metal pieces under some parchment. And as the grape juice pressed on it, that's how Gutenberg invented the printing press.
Wow.
So think about that. He did not invent the printing press by just staying in his own room with his own people, like ideating and thinking. It's when he got adjacent to somebody different than him. And when he got adjacent to somebody different, new possibilities arose that he couldn't have thought of before. And that's often what happens in these learning communities, is when you get next to people who are different, they look different, they smell different, they talk different, et cetera. That is your ripe opportunity to learn something new. And we try to cultivate that environment for the Holy Spirit to incubate the adjacent possible. And a lot of that comes through by taking some of these ideas, start talking to other people that are applying it, start talking with other experts that have been doing this. Like some people have been doing this for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. And I love learning from those people because we continue to do research and we continue to, there are questions that haven't been solved yet that we're still researching. So it's just I hate to use the word fun, but it is, you know, it's fun to explore. And the reason I hate to use the word fun is because these are pain points. Like, these are really painful questions that churches are having when 1/3 of the churches in the U.S. are in the red. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's painful, and they don't know, like, if they're going to be able to keep the doors open or not. COVID did not start that. It just accelerated that and just revealed some of the cracks. And we're trying to help come alongside of churches to help them move through that.
And it can be better. And let's say I'm listening and I want to be part of that cohort. Should they just email you, Jay? Is that the best way to start?
That's a great way to start. My email is w@moons.com. That's an easy email.
Okay.
Or they can go to the exponential.org site. I can send that information as well.
Okay.
But yeah, that's a cohort that is taking both seasoned people who have been doing these things alongside of people who are just thinking about it, starting it, ideating it, even some denominational leaders. And I've got some people that are in coaching networks that are exploring that as well. Because my hope really, Eddie, is that you get people who are coaches coming alongside of practitioners and inside of a network of people, that the adjacent possible incubates this missional imagination that creates this kingdom innovation, that this could be actually the church's best hour.
Yeah.
In the midst of these difficult times.
Absolutely. I think so. Well, thank you for the work you're doing, Jay, and thank you for taking the time to be with us and share some more about Mints with us today, my friend.
You're most welcome. Always good to be with you, Eddie.
And hey, thank you, listeners. We encourage you to take this podcast, share it with someone that would benefit. Remember, every little thing we do, it really does matter, and it makes an impact when we do things, when we work together. We're better together. Thank you for joining us today.